Thanks. So, I thought it was going to be very short presentation to actually present the language, which is called H-hat, and breaks the rule that Nate said about having Q on everything quantum related. That's the idea. So I thought, maybe talking about something that is very different from everything else, which is the quantum type system that I've been developing on it. And maybe having some more discussions later on. So just a quick summary, just briefly talking about H-hat and then quantum systems and Q&A. H-hat, for those who are physicists, H-hat is kind of a big name on or big expression in physics. It seems a right name to give it. So basically, it's a high-level abstraction quantum programming language, and that means that you have the user-facing layer on the quantum stack right below the user. And the idea is basically to be data-oriented, and it means that you don't have to think about physics, which is strange at first, but the idea is to evolve to something else and actually think more in terms of what we already know about programming. And because in the end, the ones that are going to build software will be the software engineers. So it makes sense to actually make things more structured in the way that we are all used to do. So, first defining quantum data. So everything that has a at in front of it is quantum, as simple as that. So you kind of can differentiate between literals and quantum. Of course, you have to encode and so on and so forth, but that's the next step that basically you need to define and compose the data structure and then the quantum data types, such as quantum Boolean, quantum integer, so on and so forth. And of course, you can have user-defined types with structs or enums or et cetera. For instance, you can have some like source and target, both Booleans, so they are basically part of a single data type. Or something more structured or more complex, you can do as you wish. That's basically it. So the first step is similarly to what we have on classical computing. You basically need to define some limits from what you can actually have in terms of quantum resources. So instead of thinking of registers or bits, we need to think of in terms of qubits. In the language, I call it indexes because I don't want to make people that are not used to quantum to start having to think about quantum. So I try to strip off all these physical concepts and try to make them more computer science related. So it's simple. If you have a quantum integer of size 2, so you have 2 qubits in the end to work with. If you have more, you have more. If you have less. So the idea is to compute this and try to reach the point where you cannot go further because your quantum computer does not have more memory or resources to do the computation. And then it can be calculated during the type checking, basically, if it's possible. But usually it is. And of course, you have to define quantum variables. And they are kind of different from the usual variables because they do not execute or do anything at first. They just append instructions. Because we need to remember that quantum computers, they are very slow in the sense of doing computation, compilation and computation going back to the CPU. So we need to get as much resources or as much algorithm in one batch and execute it at once. So a variable is just accumulating all these instructions. For instance, you have like a variable queue of type quantum boolean, and it will have like a function being applied to this literal false, quantum false. This is basically translated as having these instructions inside of its data. So in the end, it will be converted to something useful that we are going to talk about right now. Because once you have this quantum variable or quantum anything, it's quantum. So you cannot print it. You cannot do anything other than accumulating things inside this quantum variable. But what you can do is basically, I want to cast this quantum variable into something that is classical. In that sense, I'm just saying, yeah, I want to cast this operation into unsigned 32 integer. And from this part on, basically what happens is we are going to have some steps to be accomplished. The first one is to actually compile those instructions inside the quantum variable into something that the Qasm-like language can actually understand. In this case, I took an example of Qiskit OpenQuasm. So basically, that instruction redeem @3 @u2, it's basically this simple instruction in OpenQuasm. After that, you basically execute this into a emulator or QPU, and you may have these sorts of results in the end, a dictionary with bit strings and probability or counting of values. And in the end, we have to work with these results. But remember that we want to have a unsigned integer of 32 bits. So we need to convert somehow this into this U32. And the way that we do this is basically we can define, right now it's kind of implicit, but we can define like the way that we actually want to represent this result. So yeah, we can have this as a raw result, or we can have as weighted average, or the highest value or the lowest value. We can kind of define how we want to interpret this. And depending which kind of the resolvers protocol we choose, we have different outcomes. And after that, we basically cast this result into the actual type that we want to convert to. So in this case of the raw, we cannot convert because it's a dictionary, so it's not compatible. But in the other cases, we can actually have something that is kind of convertible. There are some other points that I would like to discuss, but maybe we can do on the Q&A session, which is the index manager, basically how you can actually manage the qubits when throughout your program, for instance. How you actually have these quantum functions converted into quantum instructions. And for instance, how you define the quantum instructions order. It's important when you consider that you may have, in case of the last talk, we may have distributed systems like quantum networks. So you may want to ask some other computer to execute some command at some specific time. So you actually need to have like this track of which instruction should be performed first or later. And yeah, there are many other points, but basically the idea is there. And yeah, reach me out if you want to know more about the project. I deliberately decided to choose a fast talk to open for questions. Because, yeah, maybe you have a lot of questions. If you want to know more about the project, it's I should push the last changes that will make actually this example feasible in a few days. I was finishing it, but a little buggy. But yeah, you can check that out there. Yeah, that's it. If I have the compiler of the language or I don't have the definition, well, right now, let's say that because we have many dependencies on the current stacks, SDKs in Quantum, and most of them rely on Python, I decided to start having this interpreter in Python. Also because it's easy for people to see the code and collaborate or discuss. But I also have another branch that has Rust code on it. And the idea is basically to have like the documentation of how the language should behave, and Python and Rust being compatible for benchmarking, and in the future having like a full, probably JIT language. Because Quantum, yeah, you cannot like compile basically everything. You have to actually execute most of the things that are inside these Quantum variables in time.
Yeah, because one of the biggest challenges now is be compliant to the timing of the instructions of each hardware stack, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of the primary tests because of interesting about the thing.
Yeah, and one of the points that I still want to address is basically like you don't have to freeze all your classical programming side while the Quantum is working, the same way that GPUs does not freeze like your CPU. So yeah, you can think of KPU being basically another driver that you can send very specific instructions, and then somehow or sometime they will come or not. So they are just waiting for being synced again. And one, just to complete, one of the ideas that I had is basically to try to use the rationale behind Erlang to the language, because I think the best distributed programming language out there is Erlang, because yeah, you can make things break and they still work nicely, or gracefully they stop working. But yeah, it's kind of a interesting point. Another one that I had a lot of time trying to figure out is you can have two Quantum variables, and then you say, yeah, I want to entangle them. But then I do something else with one of them, and it interacts with other parts of the code. How I can ensure that things are connected? Because remember, I'm just saying that this Quantum variable is a holder for like all the instructions. So now you are in this cascade of dependencies from different variables, and you may not know like which ones you need to execute first or later. So that's why I think having these like Quantum types are very useful, because you can basically say, yeah, everything inside this Quantum variable that belongs to this Quantum type will be executed just once, like just at a time. So you can basically protect from like undesired or side effects in the end. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you for the talk. I guess your index manager stops people from doing forbidden things with their qubits, like cloning or something like that. Can you talk a little bit about what the index manager is?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah,
Actually, it's much more simple. It's for not to overflow. Oh, yeah, yeah, to talk more about the index manager in the language. It's very simple, actually, because like in computers, you have the alignment of your type, right, or struct or enum. But in quantum, since you barely have like resources, you shouldn't like align everything with one size only, right? So if I'm working with quantum U2, yeah, just 2 qubits, right? It's very simple, very dumb, but you can do some working examples. And you have another like type that actually uses, for instance, this comb teleport pool probably is bigger than just 1 qubit. So I need to account for this 1 qubit plus this whatever more qubits it has. So it has to recursively look for like how many qubits it needs to allocate in one execution. So it can decide whether it's a valid execution or not, because let's say your quantum computer has 20 qubits and it requires 30. So it should not execute. That's the idea. And this part of cloning, it's basically how you define these types separated. We can discuss later if you want, but yeah, it's interesting topic. Yes?
So, just to understand correctly, if you want to make a cast, with a function, let's say, then I cannot make two quantum variables and entangle them with each other, because there would be the problem that after the measurement the other state is destroyed and so on. So that you solve it that way, that you circuit in one type, right?
Yeah, the question is basically there is this problem with entangling two quantum variables, for instance, and then you measure one and then the other is kind of loose, and trying to solve that you basically have these like quantum data types. Yeah, that's true, and you can think as a functional programming paradigm basically. Because now we are like in this whole box, everything just happens inside. There's no like outside side effects, at least on quantum. So it's basically contained. I mean, it can be remotely, like you can do a teleportation, but it's contained in this quantum data type. So it solves a lot of problems. Because let's say that in the middle of the computation, you need a previous value that you actually measured or cast into the next quantum computation. So if they are separated quantum variables, you kind of have to cast both, but not really, just have. So how do you decide that, or what you should do?
I think it's quite confusing for a physicist, but quite intuitive for a software engineer.
Yeah, and I didn't cover anything, like, because I'm kind of destroying physics here. There's no concept of qubits, there's no measurement, there's no superposition, entanglement. Everything is kind of to sound like computer science and data being transformed, basically. Like this, redeem. Oh. It's basically Hadamard. But I'm basically like redimensionalizing it to have space for more things. But that's the way that I could find to not talk about physics, talking about physics under the hood.
When casting, what is the use case
when you were casting earlier, you said like we can choose the lowest, the highest, and what is role used for?
In this case, I didn't explicitly showed anything, but in this case, it's just the highest value. But after the cast, you should have like these pointy squares and say like the kind of protocol you want to use to actually convert the data.
But when you convert to row, what is the actual logarithm? What does it cost? Because you said we cannot cast in row, for example, because it's a vector.
Yeah, it's a dictionary, right? I mean, it's like adding string with integer in Python, it doesn't work. I mean, if you have a hash map or a dictionary type, you can actually have a row value. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.